Is a new cultural revolution taking place in China? The government has cracked down on technology companies, education, entertainment, and even how long children can spend playing video games. So what's this all about? This is Inside Story. And welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. During the past few months, China has tightened regulations and rules across many areas of society. Technology, firms, education, media. Few sectors have been spared. The decisions have been sudden, dramatic, and even baffling to some observers. The entertainment industry is the latest target. Regulators have banned TV talent shows and ordered broadcasters not to promote what they call effeminate-looking men. Actors accused of tax evasion and misbehaviour have had their work taken offline. The government has also cracked down on video games. Children are only allowed to play up to 3 hours a week and only on weekends. The goal is to stop young people being influenced by so-called negative and immoral behaviour.
I don't think the new regulation makes any sense. Although it aims to help teenagers, however, the less access you get, the more curious you'll be. Different people have different levels of self-control, and they might have different kinds of supervision from parents and carers. This is not something they can simply control. People in the end can always play on another account or buy accounts from adults.
The sweeping measures have also targeted tech giants. Tencent and NetEase have been asked to eliminate content that promotes what are described as incorrect values, like money worship. And Chinese regulators have ordered the removal of ride-sharing company Didi Chuxing from domestic app stores. It's been accused of illegally collecting and using personal information. And they've also banned the multi-billion-dollar private tutoring sector from making profit or raising capital. Some celebrity fan club websites have been barred for what regulators call chaotic fan culture. And the government is promoting President Xi Jinping's political ideology through its education system. Children as young as 10 are to attend special classes. State media says the aim is to cultivate a love for the country, the Communist Party and socialism. Let's bring in our guests. In Taipei, William Yang, East Asia correspondent for DW News and president of the Taiwan Foreign Correspondents Club. In London, Xiaoning Liu, reader in modern Chinese culture and language at the SOAS University of London. And in New York, Elliot Zagman, writer and co-host of the China Tech Investor podcast. Welcome to the programme. I'd like to begin in London first with Xiaoning Liu. Xiaoning, is this the second cultural revolution by increment, by stealth?
Oh, that's a very interesting question, but I'm afraid I will say no. But I do see a revitalization of a socialist culture in terms of how the party managed the culture. For instance, there's this long tradition that a culture has been used as an instrument to shape people's opinion, to mold the ideal citizens. Recently, we see Chinese party, the Chinese government, really put a lot of effort to rectify the so-called undetermined circle, online fandom, online fan culture, and it even imposed a limit on the online video gaming.
In Taipei, William Yang, this seems to be aimed at not cracking down on current dissent, but actually trying to avoid future dissent. Everything that they're doing, it seems to be aimed at very young people, children, and it seems to be aiming to foster a sense of love for socialism, state, and for the Chinese Communist Party. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think the previous speaker has already touched on the very important point, which is that they're revitalizing the very essence of the socialist spirit, especially the socialist spirit in the Chinese Communist Party's standard and its definition. And one of the very important things that we see in all of these crackdowns on different sectors is that they are trying to prevent any force, be it a company, be it a tech tycoon, be it a pop culture icon, to actually be able to mobilize a large swath of a social circle and a society, which is why they are trying to dissolve all these online fan groups because some of these groups have already showed key signs that they are able to mobilize and be able to create some of the things that are considered as out of control in the government's standard. And I would actually say that these standards can all be applied to different sectors. We see the crackdown on major tech companies, and also we see the limit on the ability for the younger generation in China to be able to actually spend too much time on things that are considered as a chaos or a distraction for the younger generation in China.
Let's go to New York now and Elliot Zogman. Elliot, let's just talk business for a second here. If you're cracking down, or at least putting in some laws about screen time, for example, about access to pop stars, access to money culture, and you're a US record executive and you're going, China's a huge market for me, but if they're trying to get rid of all of this, then it becomes less appealing for me to invest in. From a business point of view, China's actually doing something counterproductive, isn't it?
I guess you could look at it that way.
I don't think Xi Jinping looks at it that way. But what we are definitely seeing is a deprioritization of foreign capital. So for much of the past 30 years, we've seen them really prioritize attracting foreign capital to China. I think that at this point, Xi Jinping doesn't think that that's the most important thing for China right now. And I think a really good example of this, not just with tech regulation, but just recently, the Blackstone Group had been trying to acquire the property developer Soho. And the Blackstone Group and Steven Schwarzman, they had very, very good relationships with the Chinese Communist Party. They had funded a massive, massive program at China's Tsinghua University, which is the intellectual home of the party. And, BlackRock, not Blackstone. But they have not been able to secure this deal. It was denied by regulators. And what I think Beijing is saying to foreign investors right now is that, you know, if you want to come here and make money, you can, but you know, we're not going to cater to you the way that we used to.
Shanning Liu in London, there's a real risk here that simply because this is China, it's the Chinese Communist Party that are doing it, that automatically everybody is going to go, this is authoritarian, this is bad. But I'm a parent. I worry about screen time and how much my children spend on their laptops and iPads and things like that. I worry about the impact of culture. Is this a very Chinese way of doing it? It's simply what the West is doing in other ways, but just because there's a centralized culture, this is the only way China can do it.
I'm glad you asked me this question. I'd like to say this move, in fact, partially is the CCP's response to people's demand. In the traditional Chinese culture, there's such a saying, excessive indulgence of playing saps ambition. This is what the parents are worried about their children. Some parents are really concerned about the screen time. Of course, you know, you have these polarized opinions about the government's recent measure, but some parents are really happy that the government has taken this measure to limit children's screen time, while others voiced their doubts and their reservations because is this going to be effective? I think maybe this is an immediate solution, but it's not going to be a long-term effective solution. For instance, the children may lose opportunities of self-exploration and being self-disciplined, etc. And another thing is, I'd like to say, this measure taken by the government manifests the so-called lazy government, because it just simply used a single method to implement the single method, you know, across the board, across the country, across all kinds of video games. By the way, this time they restrict the time on online video game, but not on the DVD, you know, video games. But yet there might be other solutions. For instance, you can classify different kinds of video games, because we all know some video games are educational, right? Educational. So I think the government may be a bit too lazy this time to think about how to really effectively if they're really concerned about the spiritual, you know, the healthy citizens.
Now, in Taipei, William Yang, it's not just video games, it's not just screen time, it's not just DVD. They're cracking down on actors that aren't they, that the Chinese Communist Party don't see as following their ideals. What you're effectively asking to do is all your cultural icons in China, who are Chinese, to follow a certain model of behaviour, a certain mode of behaviour that isn't bigger than the Communist Party, but is in line with Communist Party values. You're effectively imposing culture on cultural actors, and for culture to really, truly breathe, it needs to be free, right?
Right. I think there are two sides to argue against this. One side is just exactly like what you said. One of the reasons why they are emphasizing the banning on the particular sissy men, for example, men who are not looking or behaving like the traditionally very masculine way, is because they are very concerned about the impact of the Korean pop culture. And a lot of these K-pop stars have created these very sometimes so-called out-of-control phantom culture and phantom phenomenon online. And they do see some disruption, for example, in a very small period of time, their online fans will be able to accumulate and gather a large amount of money to do something that are viewed as very out of control by the government. And so in order for the government to be able to actually make sure that everything is in line with their ideals, they put up a very strict guideline and also impose them in a very strict way. And we see that most of the entertainment providers, the social media platforms, have already stopped ranking the pop stars, which used to be very, very popular on Weibo, for example. And then they have also banned all these kind of a very competitive culture and wasteful culture inside these talent shows, because actually these measures are having a lot of support from the Chinese netizens and Chinese citizens, because they a lot of the normal citizens do actually see some very toxic effect of these extreme behavior and extreme reaction to the rise of the K-pop culture. And so, but I think rather than the foreign companies and foreign entertainment providers are worrying, those who have more concerns are actually the domestic providers and domestic entertainment producers, because they won't know when the rules will be tightened again, or when the government will decide to impose additional measures to actually make their lives and the space for them to operate even harder and smaller. So I think the unpredictability of the whole thing is actually having more effect on the domestic providers rather than foreign providers.
Elliot Zogman, William makes a very interesting point, doesn't he? It's like, here we are, we have this international audience, and then we have this domestic audience as well. The international audience for Hollywood films, for example, No Time to Die, the new James Bond film, has just passed the Chinese censor. It's got access now to the largest market in the world. It's going to make a lot of money. James Bond is not a socialist. He's not a character that embodies socialist values in any way, shape or form.
You think that
Aston Martin he's driving isn't socialist?
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that actually there seems to be a hypocrisy here. The Chinese are like, our celebrities, our stars need to behave to Communist Party values. Yet, however, we don't mind Hollywood films being played at the cinema, but we are worried about BTS and K-pop values and the erosion of that kind of culture. How much of that is to do with just simple money? Like, Hollywood knows its access to that market.
I think a lot of it is
about money and is about maybe the existing relationship that Hollywood has with Beijing and with China and with China's regulators. But, you know, a year or two from now, we may see that another James Bond movie won't be able to get in. I think that's very much a possibility. But I think another way to look at it when it comes to the whole kind of quote-unquote sissy man thing, kind of cracking down on some of these sort of more effeminate celebrities. I think that the one thing that shouldn't be overlooked here is China's demographic problem. And one of the reasons why I think Beijing feels like it really needs to control the culture is because they need people to have more children. The census data recently came out, I think, in the spring of this year. And It was far worse than they had even expected. And I think that right now, Beijing's regulators are panicking and their policymakers are panicking a little bit about this sort of long-term demographic crisis that they're facing. And whatever they can do to try to, you know, juice up more baby making, that's what they're going to do. And I mean, to be honest, traditional masculinity gets married and has kids, right? And more, if you're more effeminate or something like that, maybe that's not what you want with your life. And I think that's also how they interpret this.
We should be aware of sweeping generalizations, but I will let you get away with that, Elliot Zagman. Xiaoning Liu in London. What we're talking about right now, then, and it seems to be that all three of you have said effectively the same thing, this isn't a new cultural revolution. This is a reshaping, reformulation of Chinese values, Chinese customs. Is this, therefore, an ongoing project? All of you at some point have mentioned this is what's happening right now, but it might not be what's going to be happening in the future.
I would think this is ongoing, a part of the ongoing process. As I said, the importance of the socialist culture, maybe the party nowadays do not use the socialist ideology anymore. But if we look at Xi Jinping's 2014 talks at the Beijing Forum of Literature Arts, and he specifically used the terms, the good, the true, the good, the beautiful, the three things as the essential values that we need to advocate. And so from the government perspective, all those public figures, or we call celebrities, you know, the influential public figures, they have greater social obligations to set examples for the moral direction of the society. I think this is a fundamental difference between the socialist culture and the so-called Western or capitalist culture. You know, the celebrities, they are important, not only because they produce excellent works and very entertaining, you know, movies and the TV shows, but the party, the government has expectation of them as a person, they should uphold the moral integrity. So whoever, for example, has some transgressive acts, however you define it, whether it's tax evasion, sex scandals, or other things, they may be deemed as problematic. So that's my answer.
Elliot Zagman, a lot of the US government has spent a long time accusing China of monopolistic practices, of dominating markets, of using its money to dominate foreign policy in Africa, in South Asia. And it's often complained that China has been too big to influence directly. Are things like this crackdown then a weapon for the US government to use and say, actually, what the Chinese are doing is a violation of human rights, and therefore this is something we can use to try and put pressure on them? Or, once again, is China just simply too big to put any pressure on?
Yeah, I think that's
kind of the latter. I mean, the US can say all that they want, and I believe that this is a crackdown on human rights. This is, according to my values, not something that this makes me less likely to want to live in China, I guess. But the U.S. can say all that it wants, and it does. It is effective. You know, if you look at some of the sanctions that they've been able to levy, I think it definitely has put pressure on China and its officials. But when it comes down to it, I think at this point, China doesn't really care. Like, China's going to do what China wants. And, you know, they're big enough. And I think Xi Jinping has the political will and the kind of political enough consolidation of power to be able to make it happen. And I think that's generally where they're at right now.
William Yang, a lot of the activists that you speak to, a lot of the people you speak to in your course, in your daily course of journalism, must be very concerned that China simply is getting away with whatever it wants. And Grandpa Xi is actually basically just doing whatever he wants to do. Is that a concern for them, that their voices, radical voices, dissenting voices, are just becoming lost?
Right. I think this is already a fact that we are seeing over the last few years, especially, I think, after even Hong Kong becomes one of the biggest targets for the crackdown and the extreme level of the measures that China is willing to impose on Hong Kong, bypassing all the existing system that are supposed to exist under the one country, two system. I think those who are inside China who have been experiencing this kind of very heavy-handed treatment since the, I think, the early 90s and all the way until Xi Jinping's rise in 2012, they are basically very pessimistic about how the outside world has any sort of influence and leverage to actually, I think, lesser some of the like, I think, struggle that they're facing. We are seeing a lot of the different kinds of, like, injustice being imposed by, like, I think the legal system is very vague about when to detain someone, and then someone can be detained for years before they actually finally have a sentence. And a few months after they were properly sentenced, they were released because they've already been jailed for years before they were actually able to have a proper trial. And a lot of these trials are actually happened behind the closed doors. We are actually also seeing this happening to foreign citizens, including the two Canadians and the Australian journalist Chen Lei. So I think right now the big question will be, how the international community decides to deal with China while upholding their, ideals and also their values, because it seems like if they cannot hold up a very united front against China and find a very effective way to counter China's aggression and ambition, then things like the detention of the Canadians.
Sorry, William, we are running out of time, and I would like to bring Xiaoning Liu here in London. Xiaoning, a similar question to you. Is this about reshaping the cultural values of China, or is it simply just a cracking down on future dissent, or is it a mixture of both?
I would think the reshaping the cultural value is plays a bigger part because we do have to strike a balance between the commercial and the political, and the party has to deal with a very difficult task, how not to let, the so-called capitalist values to dominate the society. But we do see a very creative resistance from the young people. For instance, we have been seeing all kinds of lay flatism, like people just like want to lie down, and a passive resistance to the anxiety, the high pressure of the work. So I do think that there are still possibilities within China.
I want to thank all our guests, William Yang, Xiaoning Liu and Elliot Zargman. And I want to thank you two for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.